Okay, 1 second, let me make this more prominent. I don't think we'll go so long today. But let's at least, I want to make sure we finish up these three chubos. And then I want to make a, I know Romy's not going to be happy, but I want to just make a few comments about Rabbanan Labayin and Tirusa insofar as it relates to our topic. Is that fair, Romy? Because partially it's related to the general question of collecting taxes. So,
yeah.
Okay. Fair. Okay, good. So let's get started here. I wanted to start with the Mordechai. So let's just go back for a second. Here, I think I'm back too far. Here we go. Okay. So we spoke about the second half of the Mordechai in Siman Taf Ayin Hey. But let's talk briefly about this first part. This first chuba that he quotes from Rami Renberg, the second part that we discussed already was his suggestion that you're gove based off someone's contribution towards causing the harm, right? Who's gorim the mazik, and he borrowed that paradigm from the Gemara in the end of Bava Kamma about the svina, which is overburdened with weight. By the way, Noah, we're looking forward to your kuntras on the Yad Ramaz geometry. I don't know if you're actually working on that, but Zacharia gave us a bit of a preview or a teaser about it. How's that coming along?
Still in the preliminary stages, so we'll have to, it's forthcoming.
Okay, that's very exciting. So let's look at this Mordechai here. So any volunteers to just take us on this interesting question that the Maharam was asked about the Shomrim of the ear, how to collect the taxes, and how the Shmira changed over time. Remember that, Chuba? Okay, Romy's volunteering. Go for it, Romy. Just let me make this bigger so you can see without losing your eyesight.
Okay.
There we go.
So basically, it seems like they used to be individually responsible for kind of doing a rotation of the Shemira, and now they're hiring somebody, right? So they have to really collect money to kind of have somebody else do it.
Exactly. So this is like, you know, in yeshiva, you have to pitch in your own person, either to do shmira or to do toranut. And so the idea is that if you're doing it with your own person, shomrim ba'atzman b'layla, what's the proper distribution, right? And then they change the practice to outsource it to, I guess, workers to do it instead of you. What's the proper distribution to fund that? And if the two different things are inconsistent with each other, is that a problem? Right? Since one is really just replacing the other. Okay, so Rami says, what does he say?
So Hishiv Rabbeinu Meir, Afal Pi Shemitzchila Hayu Shomrin Lefi HaGolgoles Im Dal V'im Ashir Mikol Makom Achari Shekvar Huspa Shmir L'Din Torah Damer Perakam V'Vasra D'Machshiv Nefi Shevach Mammon Bater Hashta Zinan. Right, so even though... Even though originally they did it a different way, so, you know, now that they're actually trying to figure out what's the fair way to do it, and, you know, the Gemara Bava Basra says, Shevach Mammon, so that's what you should do.
Yeah. So now that they're going to do it according to renting or hiring people out, then they're going to do Lefi Mammon, says that's the right method based on the Gemara. But initially, Romy, when they were doing it Lefi Nefasha, Lefi Shomrim Ba'atzman, how are they...
I mean, exactly. Everyone was whatever, contributing equally.
Exactly. Everybody was contributing equally in Dal, in Ashir, right? Whether you're rich or poor, everyone contributed the same way.
Right.
And then he goes on a little bit, which is interesting. And he says, now that they're raising money for it. So tell us this part, Rami.
B'chol davar. So
Stop there for a second. What's he saying here?
He's saying, like, of course it makes sense that when it came to the, you know, their rotation, when everyone was doing it themselves, so there's no reason to distinguish between how much everyone contribute. Everybody can kind of contribute just as well, it sounds like. And therefore, they should just contribute equally.
Exactly. So notice here that this is clearly just a distributional question. When we talked about, you know, earlier we talked about lifi nefashos versus dina nefashos. Here, it's not, the argument is not about like the risk to life that's on the line in Shmirah Seir. He's saying, look, if it's something that everybody can contribute equally for, or that the locus of the suffix or the locus of the collection is fundamentally born equally by everybody, then you're gova lefi nefashos. So when you're doing like actual tironut, everyone's contributing with their own person, everyone's equal on that front, so everyone chips in equally. Right, Romy?
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, but do you agree with that reading?
Yeah.
Right, kashem shomrim ba'atzman, and the shmira is lefi agufim, everyone could be shomer the same way, so everyone chips in equally. It's like Hobbes says in Leviathan that you know, everyone is more or less equal in their physical powers. You know, somebody could be a little stronger than somebody else, somebody could be a little weaker than somebody else, but you know, a weak guy with a dagger could kill a strong guy in his sleep. So for purposes of security, everybody can contribute more or less the same way. That's at least the theory that he has here. Although you're right, he does walk it back maybe in the next sentence about the Adrava.
Right.
Unclear why he thinks that. Like, I guess he's just thinking of like lazy, like untrained rich people who are, what, like, why does he think that the Ani could be Shomer better than the Ashi? Yeah, no, that was pretty amusing. No.
Yeah.
Noah's gonna write his next contrast on this. Why the Ani does better Shmira than the Ashir. Yeah, Romy, what was your question?
Well, I just thought it was interesting that he says Machin Gufa Ani Yachal Lishmar Kmo Gufa Ashir, like as if the, like, you know, the fact that you can contribute equally means you should contribute equally. I mean, the way that you read it already put more emphasis on the beginning half of the sentence, this maybe is the right way to read it. But this just like doesn't seem relevant to me to the distribution, the second half.
Yeah. Right, well, I think it's that Kivan Kishenai Shomer Ba'atzman Hashmira Lefi Hagufim. It just means like, what are we dividing up? We're dividing up it amongst people, right? Because the people are doing the Shmira. So why should we allocate more Shmira to one person and less to another person?
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
I mean, kind of. I mean, I would have even said that a little differently. I would have said, right, since you're protecting people and everyone's protection is equal, like,
you know, but he's not. I don't think you think he's saying that.
Well, I mean, that's what I Lafia Goof, Hashmira Lafia Goof, and that's what I thought it was. But although now I get what you're saying.
But Shehein B'nei Hashmira,
right? Right. So I agree providers. So I agree with that. But then I'm a little bit confused by why that's relevant to the distribution. Meaning, every other, you know, time that we've been talking about how to distribute, it's a question of you know, the reception of the benefit. I mean, even if it's not based on hana, but it's about reception of the, right, either how much, right, in getting in. I don't
know. Well, I think you could think it, let's think of it here just in terms of contribution to the Shmira rotations. So the thought is that if we need a physical body to stand guard at the gate, then you know, each body is going to contribute equally to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're saying if theoretically you could say if there's a really strong guy, he should contribute more.
Yeah, you might have said that. Mm-hmm. But he's trying to say, you know, like I think like the Hobbesian thing, more or less everyone's equal, you know, when it comes to Shmira, mm-hmm. Right? Are you guys good with this? This idea makes sense to you? Anybody else share Romy's initial reservations about this? Josh Brofman, what do you think?
Sounds this is good?
Okay, so I think this makes sense. I think this is pretty intuitive. And again, I just want to emphasize, this is just about a fair distribution. So the thought is, if everyone's chipping in their time, everyone's time is worth equal, right? It's interesting today whether we would have the same intuition and say like, oh, a lawyer who makes $800 an hour, his time is worth more than somebody who makes minimum wage. So exactly how you characterize the sense in which everyone's equal for Shmira is important. But the thought is, you can think of this more of like maybe from a socialist perspective. It's like just when we're speaking about human contribution, like there's no reason to value one person's contribution more than the other. All right. Good. Excellent. Okay. But then he does say, if you're switching now to a different method of paying for security, just read this part quickly. So what's his point now that they're switching?
Right. You shouldn't say that you should still keep the difference in. You shouldn't say right that you should keep the original distribution like that. It should still be equal.
So it's very interesting, right? So now that you're outsourcing it to pay Shomrim to do it, now it's no longer about human labor contribution. It's no longer about each person contributing, volunteering their time. Now it becomes a financial calculus. And once we're contributing money towards this thing, then we're going to be govel lefi mamon, because people are unequal, like when economically speaking or financially speaking. So from that perspective, it makes sense to shift it to a different type of distribution. Okay, everybody okay with this, Mordecai? Okay, so I think that's a very interesting contribution to Howard Gove, that it's in his mind, if it's about labor or human contribution, we're all equal. And if we're talking about monetary contributions, then of course it's going to be lefi mamon. Okay, so everybody see that? So it's not about the threat. It's more about the type of contribution that we're asking from the constituents. Okay, so let's move to Rabbeinu Yerucham, which is going to be a similar type of question about how to decide between lefi mamon or lefi nefashos, the sense in which everyone's equal or in everyone, or the sense in which people are different. But here, it's not in terms of what each person has to contribute. It's not a question of whether we're being asked to contribute mamon or being asked to contribute our time and personal contribution. Here it seems to be more about what types of services are we receiving, right? Are we receiving services that are ought to be allocated based on nefashos or based on mamon? Let's see. But not like the Mordechai's question, where it's about what are we asking of you, right? Time or money. Here it's more about what type of service is being provided to you. So let's look at that, Rabbeinu Yerucham. Tzchara, you want to take the lead on this, Rabbeinu Yerucham, since you brought it to our attention originally?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Noah actually brought it to my attention, but I don't mind taking it.
So Noah, do you want to take it over for Zachariah?
Okay, so you saw Noah
initially said no, and then he said okay. This reminds me of somebody who said that he took one of the smicha bechinas in Israel for the Rabbanut, and like the Rava or she walked in and everyone stood up, and he's like, no, everyone, sit down. Yeah, go ahead, Noah.
Yeah, the Rama actually brought this one to my attention. So he quotes the Rabbi Yerucham. So this is the one that he quotes about, you know, when he talks about the public education.
This is really a
true
of
Haigo
that
Rabbi Yerucham quotes. Right, yeah. Yeah, so there's a long chain. Ashley Ravrave. So, Sheila Rabbi Nohai Shishalta, Yaskilcha Akel, Al Osa Shishal, Mahudin Tor Bishar Chazan, Shisharuhu Bishum Yadua, Imyatulu Akal Fimamon, Kishar Olia Kahal, that's Dakos, Shinamar Bahem Ish Kamat Nas Yado. Okay, so basically they hire a chazan with for a certain amount of that money. They need to figure out how to distribute the money. Do they do it like other oleakal, like other yokes upon the community, that it's like each person does it basically like how much, you know, lefi mamon, or is it like...
Yeah, so that's already one nice perspective. That
the default is lefi mamon.
Exactly. Generally, it sounds like the ole hakol are lefi mamon. And it's also nice that he anchors this in the psukim, right, of ish kamat nas yado, that you see even in the Torah's perspective, some things are based off your financial wherewithal. Or what's the other tzad?
Or is it lefi nefashos, because this is lechapara, like a kofar nafsho. So therefore you do everybody equally, because like each person is like benefits equally in a sense from the tefillah.
Okay, so let's think about that a little more for a second. So he's saying, look, some things for the kahal are lufi mamon, ishkama nas yado. Other things for the kahal are lufi nefashos. And what's the paradigm he gives in the Torah for this?
Yeah, so like maestros versus like machtes hashekel.
Yeah, machtes hashekel is the example he gives, right? And I think when he says l'kapara, he's saying the reason why the machtes hashekel is equal to everybody is because that's l'kapara. And something that's for kapara, everyone's equal, right? It's not like a rich person's kapara is somehow more expensive than a poor person's kapara. I guess you have to figure that out with like a carbon olabiyorid exactly. You know, how this perspective on the machtes hashekel squares with like a type of carbon olabiyorid requirement. But he's saying, look, for kapara, it's ashir lo yarbe v'adal lo yamid. Everyone's equal on that front. And again, that seems to speak like if it's kofar nafsho, if you're paying the redemption for your soul, it's not like the soul of a rich person is treated differently than the soul of a poor person. Okay. So what's the suffix here? So the question here is about what? Noah, which issue?
Yeah, like where does the chazan fit within these two paradigms?
Exactly. Should we view the chazan as more of a kapara type requirement where everyone has to chip in equally, or the chazan more about sharts archeakal? Let me just say the chazan, I guess we'll see from the tshuva itself, a chazan has multiple functions, right? That's part of the interesting analysis of the tshuva. Chazan doesn't fit squarely in any of these neat categories. Okay, so go on, Noah, take us through the analysis.
So ve'amar, and I guess this is like the answer already from Rafai. So ki ata danta ad ata misvara ki yeza lefi mamon. So like you explain until now that it should be lefi mamon kisharole habinyanot umlamde tinokos shamru baheni takanas yosho ben gamla ilach kofin benia yerzez shiyu moshiben umlamde tinokos bechol yirviir. So you kind of explain that it should be lefi mamon, like other public education and like building funds. Vinir Ali, Kishar Malamde Tinokos, Bayaros Kitanos, Inichol Mayachidim Latitzhar, Malamid, Kihi Al Kolha Kahal, Lufimamon, Loab Lusam Shalnarim Lavad. So not just the child, like not just parents, but like everybody would need to contribute Lufimamon.
Yeah. This is what we saw in the Shulchan Aruch, actually, that when you impose the tax for Jewish education, everyone pays, not just the parents of school age children. So this is like, you know, the idea that even the people who don't benefit from the school system have to contribute to it. Maybe the argument is really they do benefit, even though they're not sending their kids there, right? Different ways. I know we had this debate at the beginning of the sugya about neighborhood effects, right? Is that not going to beat up on Zolti again for keeping the library to himself? But right, we had this type of discussion earlier. So Rav Hai says that he thinks that everyone's got to chip in for this. But then he says, even if I'm wrong about everyone chipping in for Malamde Tinokos,
yeah, so even if the Malamid would only need to be paid for by the parents, so they need the Malamid more than anybody else. They don't have children or grandchildren. So which is an obligation upon everyone, right? Anybody who's over the age of mitzvos. Okay, so it's like, I think the person asking Rabbi Nohai, like himself had like answered somebody else's question or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, that's what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But notice there's a very interesting back and forth here about who has to bear the burden. Like which people have to chip in. So is it just the people who show up in shul type thing, right? So he's saying, look, I think when it comes to Malamde Tinokos, even the people who don't send their kids to school have to pay. But even if I were to hold that only the parents of children who actually use the schools pay, I think tefillah is different because tefillah is obligatory on everyone over bar mitzvah. So that's why even if you don't show up to shul and you don't use the services of the shul, since you're a bar chiyuva, since it's a chova al kol hakahol, let's just say it's a chova on the entire tzibur, everyone has to chip in regardless of whether they're benefiting from it. So like a non-shul goer can't exempt himself on that basis.
Yeah, is this talking about in a world where people like don't have sidurim and like the ability to fulfill their obligation themselves, or is this like a comment about tefillah b'tzibur as being like something special?
I would say this probably just means tefillah b'tzibur. Like everybody has an obligation to participate in communal tefillah.
It's like the chova al kol hakahal.
Yeah, That's how I would read it. Because otherwise you can make your argument saying, hey, if I don't need the services of the Shliach Tzibor, then I daven on my own, right? This is where Josh Brofman is to remind us again of the importance of davening the Tzibor, right? It's a shout out to him. Okay, so what does the Rabbeinu Hai go on to say? And this is what's really, things get interesting. So he wants to say everybody's got to chip in. And then, let's see, he points out, as you said, that the Shoel had already answered the question somewhat, right? You said,
yeah, so should I keep on reading?
Yeah.
So ve'omir kish shtei hasvaro sheiz karta b'shilo secha miyos haschar nechlak lefi nefashos b'shavek yon machtis hashakel olafi mamon kigon atzdako v'shar le'akahal shtei hasvaro sim nechonos. They're both right. Va'apal pishin sosur zo hasich liachrebe. Even though they're conflicting or they can't coexist, so you have to figure out which one is correct. So
Wait, one second. I think here... we need you to write a contrast on Rabbeinu Haigon's theory of bivalence logic. Because I think what he's actually saying here, you know, this is the problem. You can't have P and not P at the same time, right? That's the issue of bivalence. And so here, actually, I think Rabbeinu Haigon's saying something interesting. Shtei hasvaros heim nechonos, right? He's saying, look, you want to ask lefi mamon or lefi nefashos? They're both right. V'yafal pishein sozer zuzu. And even though they contradict each other, then he says, "Hasechel yachriya beinayim." There's some rational way of. I actually don't. You could read this as saying to decide between them, but it could also mean that he means there's a way to reconcile them, even though they're inconsistent. Because what he's going to say at the end is actually "Kasav hashlishi yachriya beinayim." Right. So he actually wants to have it both ways. He says, "Look." It's Lafim Amon, there's Lafim Amon. They sound inconsistent, but there's a way to like we're not forced into P or not P here. Is that no? Yeah, I think that's what he means in this line. So he's worthy of a little contrast in multi-valued logic.
Somebody else will have to write it.
Yeah. Okay, Josh, you want that responsibility? You're the math major in the class. If not, we're gonna give it to Zacharia because he took logic at least.
Sounds good. I'll use it for my Gemara article for the Pekina.
There you go. There's a footnote in Lonely Man of Faith where the Rav says something like, you know, Halacha never accepted two-valued logic, like logic that's just true or false. And he says something like, Bein Hashmashos is being like both Yom and Laila or something in that footnote. So we could add this Rav Haigon to that contrast of examples. Okay, so what does he say over here? So what's his analysis?
So ki hatfila lefi shehi kneged tmidin u'musafin u'shar korbanos tzibor v'chol ilu inan ba'us min hanedava ela mimachtis hashekel. Right, so tfila is kneged korbanos, and korbanos come from communal contribution through the machtis hashekel, right, which is k'moshe yisbar b'masach hashpelim nischayid nizak yischar achazan shatfila nikmara bishvilo.
So notice here, Noah, he has two dinim, right? It's for the yachid who doesn't know the tila, plus somebody who knows, but there are some things that are chovos tzibor.
Right.
Right. So he wants to say those aspects of a chazan's responsibility should be collected how? They parallel the machtis hashekel contributions. So how should they be collected?
Lathina Phashos.
Yeah, Lathina Phashos. Now, it's not so obvious to me whether he's saying that these are, as he mentioned earlier, kapara-based things, and therefore this Lathina Phashos, or he just means that in the same way that the Machtis HaShekel is collected with kapara, for kapara, based on like a kapara type consideration. The Machtis HaShekel is what was used for the Chovos HaTzibor, so therefore whenever something is an equal Chovos HaTzibor, we're going to distribute it equally among the constituents. There may not be such a big difference between those two options. But he doesn't emphasize the kapara part per se here. He just emphasizes that it parallels the Machtis HaShekel, which has an equal contribution of each individual.
The way I read it was that it's even more than that. It's not just like a parallel obligation or like like an analog through like this is also through kapara, that it's more of like a direct like descendant of from Machtis HaShekel, which is collected in a certain way. Like its tefillah is keneged korbanos, and korbanos are collected from Machtis HaShekel, and Machtis HaShekel is with Fina Fashos. So therefore, like tefillah is like a like almost like a just come like clearly comes from Machtis HaShekel.
Yeah. Okay. I hear that. It's kind of added to the Kuntrasan logic, right? If it's like a chain argument. Right, tefillah is from Karbanos. Karbanos are from Machtis HaShekel. So tefillah is from Machtis HaShekel. Something like that, Noah? Okay, that's fine. That sounds good. So that is part of his analysis. And he says, so anything that's for tefillah in principle should be distributed equally, right? Asher lo yarvav adal lo yamit. But he notices, and this is a very interesting part of his analysis also, that a chazin today doesn't perfectly map the chovos hakarbanos, right? So you can see Rav Haigon has a very, very, very reasonable analysis, I would say. And so what does he say?
So they need to do a lot of, you know, other functions like yotzeros and krovos and you know, weddings and festivals. So the
tiferes hahamon, right? It's like for the aesthetic of like the masses, right?
It's chazanus.
Yeah, entertainment, right? Or just to beautify the public gatherings. Notice how he says that's like rove of what chazanim do. Doesn't he say that? Of his manazes for these occasions, which cuts anchor from the tefillah discussion, right? So it's not really a Machtis HaShekel type consideration directly. The ode.
Ve'od ki b'tfilos hamechuyavos lo dai lahem b'chazan she'in kolo arit. Aba mosivin b'schar ha'chazan k'shemotzi'in oso, k'shemotzi'in oso yodea nagin b'ni'imos, b'chayote baza v'yishchai b'lefizosh.
Hold on a second. So what's his point here?
Right, so it's like even for the things that are strict obligations, you know, they want to sort of add things that add elements of it that actually aren't fulfilling that strict obligation, like singing nicely.
Exactly. So when we do when we write the kuntres on chazanim salaries, we have to apportion how much is going for the actual tefillos, how much is going for the, you know, singing Moz Tzur, right, at the shul gatherings, and how much is going for just the pleasant voice of the required davenings. And then he thinks that those are tzvei dinim within chazan's performances. Okay. So therefore, what?
Yes, the base chayv lefizeh sheyes charachazan nechlak al shnei hadvarim kitzad misharim kama hayunosnim bischarachazan ilu hayadayla hemimenu b'tfilas hamechuyavos kigon tmidinu musafin b'tov se'amadien kigon tachnunim b'tanios ve'akinos b'tishba v'aslichos b'li hamishmeros v'seder yoma kiprim leilu v'yomo shafap hishinam yikariyachivin v'inan gam kin me'advarim sheyesh lahem gevul yadua erkam b'hin b'inai aval. Okay, so in other words, just you have to figure out like how much is getting paid for the necessary things, for the things that aren't strictly necessary,
I think it's also interesting here what he throws under necessary. It's a bit of a distraction for us. Hmm. But I think he's trying to subsume these types of things under necessary.
Right.
So, yeah. I think he's trying to say these are so important that we could view them as obligatory, even if we know they're not like Kneged Ha Tmidin, or they're not Kneged the Karbanos in the strictest sense.
Yeah, that's right. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting position that he takes, right? So go on, Aval HaTfila.
Aval HaTfila Mechuyabas Be'irach HaNedavos Hein HaTmidin V'HaMusafin Shehayu Ba'us HaKol Mitrumas Alishka Shehay Samimach Tuz HaShekel.
So I'm not sure why there's an aval here. It's a weird contrast, because he wants to say all of these are part of the Machtes HaShekel type collection. So you see how much of the Chazen contributing to all these required things, or at least the things that he wants to value as required. And then the Acher Kach
Ron Kamahim Motzin Beschar Zeh, how much they expend. And then they like figure out how much they pay extra for the chazan, or like how much they pay for a chazan who knows like both the chovos of like Judaism and the minhagim of like this particular community that are like extra.
Right. Well, I think here he actually is thinking that this is part of the same necessary,
the same value, the same thing. Okay.
Right. Rowan Kamah Himotsian Biskarza. You pull out the actuaries or the statistician, you say, how much would the Kahal pay for these necessary things? Right? The Chovos Hadasum and Hagiat Zibor, which he says are all Machtes HaShekel type collections. Right?
Okay.
And you do that as Lufina Fashos. And then, by contrast,
so Masha Mosif Nazashir Mischar Hachazan Sarich Lechalko Lefi Mamon Kemosh Ar Olea Kahal Kiati Feres Vahanidivus Bechagon Ilu Hadvarim Shinam Hechrichim Him Holchim Achar Mamon. And then you like figure out how much extra over everything that we just said you pay, and you split that Lefi Mamon.
Yeah, and then he closes the tshuva with this Tzvedinim, you know, because he said it's a. Even though Lufi Mamon and Lufi Nefashos are inconsistent with Machria Beneim, he says, V'zeo shemachras varasi kishtei panim elu. Right? That there are two dimensions to paying for a chazan, partially Lufi Nefashos, partially Lufi Mamon, because there are two different components to the chazan's job. So, just Noah, give us this summary here. What's important for us to take away from this tshuva for our question of Lufi Nefashos and Lufi Mamon?
Yeah, so like you can have communal obligations that are like mixed, that have certain elements from both, and it's okay to sort of like split them. And he just adds this, he has these like two Doraisa paradigms of Ish Kmat Mas Yado and Machtes HaShekel. So
yeah, and the idea is that for things that are strict Chovos HaTzibur, those are collected Lufi Nefashos because everyone requires them equally, the religious services. All right, for when it comes to the obligatory religious services, Hadal lo yamit va'ashir lo yarbe. Does everybody see that? But things that are communal indulgences, right, things that are for the aesthetic of the community, for those things, the ashir has to pay more than the ani. Does that make sense to you guys? Is that reasonable? Does that seem a little arbitrary why he breaks it up this way? What do you think? He says, hatifeeres v'hanedivos, right? Things that are volunteers or for pe'er, those should be imposed more on the rich than on the poor. Does that resonate with you guys? Does that make sense? You might say so, right? Because he doesn't explain why. And the tshuva of the Maran Padua, which we're going to see in a second, he might give us an extra reason for this. But let me just pose this question. You could tell me what you think. Which one does he take to be the rule and which is the exception? Does he think that by default, everybody should be paying Lefina Fashos, unless there's some reason to reassign it as Lefi Mamon. So in which case, the kapara is the standard for communal services, but the Tiferes and the Nedava stuff, is there's a special reason there to reassign it, Lefi Mamon. Or does he think that, no, generally speaking, you do Lefi Mamon, unless there's a very special reason like kapara to treat everybody equally. Do you have a sense as between those two, which way Rav Haigon is looking at it? Zolti?
Not necessarily, but I'm curious why, like, Lamai Nafka Mina, why does it matter?
Yeah. Lamai Nafka Mina. I think the Nafka Mina for me is, which one of these is almost, is should we view as the default way of assigning communal obligations, right, or communal responsibilities? Is the is there a presumption of equality, or is there a presumption of a scaled distribution, which requires special justification in cases where we're gonna make it equal? So I'm really asking about what do we take as the halacha's default presumption for assigning these types of communal services?
Does there necessarily have to be a default? Could you say like, oh, we're playing agnostic until we could place it in one of these two categories, and then until then we don't?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, you could say that. Or is it kapara type things versus pair type things? I want a better traction on the basis of the distinction between cases where we go with Imamon and cases where we go with Pinafashos. Yeah. Anybody else have a sense on this question yet? I don't think there's enough here in the Rav Haigon to take a clear stance on it. Zecharia, do you have a sense on this or?
I mean, from his comment at the start where it's like, oh, it seems to be that there's like historically most things are Lefi Mamon, most things going on in the Kahal. I guess I would probably suggest that most things are going to be Lefi Mamon until.
Yeah, and by the way, I thought the Mordechai that we just saw before this also implied that when he said, look, if they were doing it Lefi Gufim, fine. That's how they were doing it. A Guf is a Guf, so everybody has the same Guf. But once they're starting to hire people, oh, that's of course Lefi Mamon because the Gemara says Guf and Lefi Mamon. Right, it sounded from the Mordechai, according to Maran, that it sounds like Lefi Mamon is the baseline. In this case, the Rav Haigon is a little less obvious, right? Because, oh, he says, oh, it's a Chovas HaTzibur. If it's a Chovas HaTzibur, it's Machzis HaShekel. And Machzis HaShekel is collected equally. But you know, it's hard to take a clear stance on this issue here. But I want us to be sensitive to that distinction. Sorry, are you able to follow up?
No, nothing particular.
Okay, so let's move to the Maran Padua, and let's see how the Maran Padua weighs in on this issue. So the Maran Padua Simen Mem Beis, Maran Padua, you can see here, late 15th, early 16th century, central to Eastern Europe, Prague, and then Poland. There's a lot of interesting things that happened in the Maran Padua's life. He was in contact with the Rama. I don't know if any of you know the famous Tshuva on competition, the Rama and Simen Yud. It's about a fight that the Maran Padua had with a non-Jewish publisher over publishing the Rambam. No, so we're going to see this later on in the year when we get to the very beginning of the second parak. It's like Daf Yud Test, Daf Chaf. Some very cool stuff there with the Maran Padua and the Rama. So stay tuned for that later on in the year. But let's see what he says here in this tshuva. So we have a volunteer to take us quickly through this discussion. Volunteer. We've got a chance to look at this Maran Padua. Zolti, did you get a chance to look through Maran Padua?
It's very possible, but I don't recall it so well right now.
Okay, anybody feel more comfortable? Sorry. All right, take it away.
Yeah. So, v'hinei al davar binyan beis knesses, alo klal gadol kasa maram, right, she's going to maram Rothenberg, shekol hei chashulun nuchal liklos b'nechashos, as parm v'gobim fi'imam. As in, there's no explicit way you can find to
make it depend on the flushos, then you're going to go by mamon.
So by the way, what that sounds almost like, the presumption is mamon, unless you could somehow show that this is a special nefashos type collection.
Okay. Yeah. And Maram dealt with the particular case of a chazan for the Yom Ra'im. Then he said, that's the female.
Notice that's at odds really with the analysis of Rav Haigon, who says that a chazan is at least supposed to be split, right? Because part of the chazan is machtas hashekel type chubas atzibur.
Right.
So, okay, so go on.
I thought this was a fascinating reason, as in the richer you are, the more encumbered you are, and therefore you're gonna have to stay in this town for the Yom Ra'im, and therefore you really need a chasen. But you know, a poor vagrant can just like go snore somewhere else, you know.
Exactly, meaning what are they leaving behind? They're leaving behind a pot and a pan, right? They're not worried about that. It's the Ashir who, if he leaves his house, shows you how vulnerable these communities were. But if the Ashir went away for Yantif, all his stuff will be gone when he comes back. Now, I guess not like today where you have a security system and a police department watching over your home. That's really how it was back then. But this is a very, I would say, circuitous way, or I would say a convoluted way of getting at why Schar Chazen is Lefi Mamon. No, I mean, is that... Today it's really the opposite, right? The wealthier you are, the more you're going away from Yantif. Right? So only the Aniyim should have to pay for the Schar Chazen. But if that's empirically true. This is a strange thing, right? So the Chazen is Lufi Mamon because it's the people who are stuck in town who are obligated to pay for it.
I thought it's kind of the Maram trying to reach for Ahana principle. So just backing up a second, the only justification we've seen for Lufi Mamon so far, like in the Gemara, let's say, is for security, which makes a lot of sense, right? They have more to protect. To apply it to places that aren't about security, and there's no obvious reason why it should be proportional to their wealth, requires a creative stara like this.
Right. So you're saying... So you're saying this is really a security issue. Why do we need a chazan in town? Because we can't risk going out of town.
I was kind of saying more just like kind of like from a epistemological thing. Like the principle of Flimamon is actually pretty narrow. Like we only seen it in like building the Choma, the Shomrim, that sort of stuff. The idea that we should apply it broadly to anything to do with the community is not just move on, may love.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, Rav Haigon seemed fine with it, so... But you're right, the Maram Padua, or the Maram in this case, needn't be bound by that argument. So you're saying it's an interesting argument. You've got to connect it to Tzarcher Yer. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay, fine. So he says, look about Basra. Okay. Mordechai Katzer, Muha Yoser, Shekai, Alstir Sechazan, M. Kane, Mashmash Schiris Chazanim, Shel Koloshana. So if it's a not just given to Ra'im Chazan, but it's an all year long Chazan, you can't apply this reasoning, and then you can't apply the standard.
Right, because there's no clear way of connecting wealth to the requirement of having a Chazan. Right, the question is, what's the causal connection between Mamon and Sfiras Chazan?
Yeah. So the Kacha who
let me just point out. We in the back of our minds we have this distinction between the distributional question and the justificatory question. Which do you see the Maram Padua or the Maram in this case emphasizing when he says we're govel of the mamon because of the fact that they can't leave town for Yantif?
I don't know, my sense is that's just all about the distribution. Like, it's obvious people in the community should pay for the cost. That's like the baseline. I'm not sure.
Well, unless he's saying that the only reason why the community needs a chazen is because some people can't leave. No, he's saying, why are we hiring a chazen in the first place? Oh, because some people are trapped in town for Yantif.
Hmm.
But it's not like he expects everyone to. You think he thinks everyone should leave? Like, you know, otherwise everyone should leave, and that would be normal.
That seems to be the operative. It's a strange assumption. Doesn't that seem to be like? Why isn't everybody going into? You know, the I don't know. Why isn't everybody centralizing in the one big base on Mikdash? Or I don't know. One big gathering for why isn't everybody going to YU for Yom Narayan? And he's like, oh, the reason is because some people have to stay home because they got to watch over their money. I agree, Romy. It's a really peculiar assumption, but that does seem to be what he's saying.
I read it like one
froze for a second. Okay, that's fine. I think we're frozen. Just give me 1 second. Let's see if this corrects itself. Or at least you guys are frozen.
You hear us now?
You guys are all frozen. Yeah, I hear you, but a little delayed. But all right, Zachariah, why don't you continue with the tshuva?
Sure. So the tshuva goes on. This works. So he says, raising the question of Chazan of all Yoram. So he says, "Zekachahu min agenu b'chol kihilos shegoven achatzu l'fi mamon v'achatzu l'fi nefashos." So for the year-round chazan, we would split it half and half, half by mamon, half by nefashos. So that's the model for chazan. So now he's back to the original question. How can we distinguish between building a shul versus hiring a chazan? Exactly. But then he has an interesting move. So here has explicitly motivated reasoning. It's like, well, we should get the aniyim to have to pay less. The lomar ki binyan eino del meleskiris chasen. So we should make a chiluk that the shul building is not comparable to renting a chasen. Oskiris basic necessity or renting a shul. Ki haskiros porim midei shana b'shana. Because the renting you're paying for each year, I guess, as you're using it. Va'ani b'zman shenemtza b'ir pore imahem ki nehene kvo ashir liyos yotzei b'tfila. And the ani, while he's in town, he's paying with them because he's benefiting. V'chayev kmo ashir v'eim otagbum. And he's just as chayev as the ashir, and it's not dependent on money. Aval habinyan, but to build.
Yeah, so that's a little. It's kind of a strange view. Right, where he wants to say that if it's just a yearly rent that the community is paying, the ani is just as obligated because he also benefits. So then it should be nigvei lefi nefashos. Right, there's no reason to assign it to the rich person more than to the poor person. But if it's about constructing a beis hakneses, that's different. So why?
Right, aval binyan hu alzman meruba, but a construction project that's a very long term. Project Muruba ala Asid va'ani yachol lazov diras irzo b'neka. He could leave the city anytime. Walachas iracheres shaloi tzarich lebinyan. So and then he won't need this binyan anymore. Avala ashir mamono va'aska ma'akvenos sokanal. But using the Maram Sara, a rich person is very encumbered and is going to be staying in this town for a long time, and therefore he does have a great use for the construction project. So it's not fair to get the ani to pay
for a big permanent project. Excellent, right. And by the way, does it sound to you as it's, to me it sounds that when they're not paying for a permanent project, they're all paying equally. Right, that's the section I bolded. V'chayiv kimo asher v'eino tali b'mama.
I mean, it contradicts the line 4 lines earlier where he said, oh, the skiras chazan for the year is half and half. Right, as he said, kachach u'men agenu b'chol akilo, shegov nechatzvi fivmo nechatzvi tfi nefashos. I think maybe what he's doing now is, he's trying to find, like, why is there any justification of lefi nefashos? And now he's trying to say, well, we have a Lefina Fashos factor because it's Tila for this year. Each person gets Anah. However, a Binyan, there should be no Lefina Fashos factor.
So the way I read the flow is that he started off saying, Chatzi Lefina Fashos, Chatzi Lefina Mamon. That should apply to the Beis HaKnesses also. And then he's like, you know what? Actually, maybe it should be Kulo Lefina Fashos. You're saying that this is just chatzi chatzi, right? Whereas the binyan should be kulo lefi mama.
Yeah, that's where he ends up.
Yeah, right. I think you're right. Good, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what's his last distinction?
And his final distinction, Vodish Lazakos Laniam, Kiyasbikalhem all arrive, it's Jifrid Orvana, Leos Makon Tfila. So poor people, you know, they just need, you know, a backyard tent for davening together. Achashirim, Yifa'u, Basil, Kaman Bamona, Mishum Kavedas Hashem, Mehonacha. So but the rich people, you know, they have to build a nicer shul because of the, you know, the Pasuk idea that you should honor Hashem from your wealth. Therefore, it seems you should not collect this lefina fashos, presumably at all. It should be lefina mamon.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. Now you should have done the Rav Haigon analysis and done the difference between a Beis HaKnesses that's a tzrifa d'orvani versus a Beis HaKnesses that's makom pe'er and roman beis lokenu. But he says, look, part at least you could construe a Beis HaKnesses construction as mostly about being mishum pe'er. And that's a reason to be Gova Lefi Mama. So his analysis, in my opinion, seems to be focusing about, like, why are we constructing it this way? Or why, like, what's the reason why we're hiring a chazan in the first place? And he thinks if it's primarily to service the Ashirim, that's a reason to go Lefi Mama. Like, if the reason for the project is motivated by servicing a certain class of people. That how you understood it also? That's how I understood, like, the core point of his moves. The chazen is to service the people who are stuck in town. The Beis HaKnesses is to give a nice structure for the rich people. And so if the project is skewed to part of the constituency, then that constituency should bear the main costs of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. My sense, what I took away from the shoot was, like, there's a certain amount of flexibility and kind of post hoc reasoning with the distribution. In other words, like, we know everyone's chayiv. That's right. So we know everyone's chayiv, and, you know, we have to get the, you know, tax code to look how we want to, right? You know, there's actually, like, a position, like, oh, why is that people complain? Like, why is the taxes so complicated? It's like, no, like, it's a feature of modern government that taxes are so complicated so that you can, like, carve out exceptions for all the people that you want, whether, you know, legitimately or not. But, like, right. That's a feature, not a bug.
So what I see you as saying, Zacharia, which I like very much, is you're saying, look, really, what's going on here? It's all Mishpat HaMelech. That's what gets taxes going. But then you could use these lighter types of considerations to gerrymander the distribution in the right way.
Right, like the Maharam Svara of, like, oh, rich people are more encumbered, so they got to pay more. Like, all right.
It was before Uber Blade. You know, just fly out of town for the weekend. Or even the idea that, the Ashirim are the ones who are stuck in town for Yantif, so they should bear the cost. Saying these are not considerations that would carry the day normally. Yeah. Noah, you have a follow-up on this?
Yeah. Also, like, an interesting thing about this tshuva that, I don't know, maybe this is, like, on a kind of line of reasoning that the Yad Rama, like, a level of like, precision that would, like, only interest the Yad Rama. But, like, based on his reasoning about amount of time in terms of, like, years that you, like, as a family will, like, get out of the shul. So, like, Ashirim are just going to be in the community for longer. Like, it shouldn't be, like, a strictly Lifi Mammon. Like, it should be, like, sort of, like, Lifi Mammon, and then, like, with a cutoff at some, like, threshold, like, wealth, where, like, having, like, you know, a like, $200,000 house doesn't, you know, make so much of, you know, that's the same as having, like, a $5 million house.
Right, you're saying it should be a threshold, meaning the threshold is once you have enough resources that you're locked into the community, then everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, like, does he, like, it's almost like he's trying to, like, how strict are these, like, Lifi Mammon, like, is he trying to just, like, put it into, like, one of two categories, or is it, like, more trying to figure out, like, what's actually, like, the proper...
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you guys, tell me if this is what you're saying. I think what you're asking is, even when we say Lifi Mammon, does that lock us into, like a linear line, like the more money, the more you pay? Or does it just mean that mammon can also be a consideration in how we distribute the tax? But maybe the mammon consideration is a cutoff, right? Yeah. Or maybe it's a exponentially increasing curve. It's just that once mammon is relevant, then we could figure out how relevant we want it to be in distributing it.
Like, the whole time when Zachariah and I were learning this, we sort of just assumed it was, like, Lifi Mammon meant linear function. And, but then it's, like, but I don't know.
That doesn't match the justifications
in a lot of
these Rishonim are giving.
Yeah, and I don't know, did we ever see that specifically said, Zachariah? Like,
the linear function explanation? No, I don't think it's been explicit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. So did you guys hear that? Does everyone hear that point? I think it's a very core question. What does Lifi Mammon mean? Does it mean that we're just departing from Lifi Nefashos analysis? Or does it mean that there's a specific methodology of Govan Lifi Mammon, like a linear function or an exponential function or, you know, whatever it might be? Thoughts on this? I think that's a great point. We don't have enough content in these tshuvas to nail that down, but we should keep our eyes open for that. All right. Okay, that's what I wanted to cover in these through tshuvos. How about this? Should we save Rabbanan Lo Tzrichei Netirusa for tomorrow? We'll just do a quick hour and a half, and I'll pull out some basic haros on that Gemara. So let me just tell you. So read through the Gemara on Daf Ches. I'm sure most of you haven't prepared it yet, right? Or at least not carefully. Okay, Kobe's saying no, Benji's saying no. Although I can't, because aren't you guys back to back? So it's hard to know whose head was moving. Yeah. So I'll say this. Let's prepare the Gemara and Daf Zayin based off Chesam and Aleph, the Rabbanan Lo Bayin Netirusa discussion. And I actually want you to consider two things. Number one, what exactly is the reason cited by the Gemara why the Chachamim are exempt from taxes? When are they obligated to chip in? When are they not obligated to chip in? But what's the underlying reason why they're exempt? And how does that tie into the different rationales we've seen so far for Govan Lifi Mammon, Lifi Nefashos, Hana, cost-based, Gorim Hanezek-based? So I want you to keep those in mind as you look through the Gemara. One thing that I want you to be sensitive to in addressing those two questions, the question is why they're Pater and how those Pturim align with the bases of collecting the tax in the first place, is I'm a little skeptical when you look at the sugya closely that Rabbanan Lo Bayin HaNetirusa is actually the explanation for the Ptur, as opposed to, meaning, so that might, the Gemara says that in a few cases, and the Rambam, you know, says that Torah is Mishamram, but I want you just to, when you read the sugya, are there other things going on also? So, for example, when the Gemara talks about in Peronios ba elabishvil amearetz, is that might be about who's gorim the nezek in a lot of cases. At one point, the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Ezra about how the tax was not imposed on the Kohanim and Levim, because the Rishonim explain, because the Kohanim and Levim, they're engaged in the avoda. That has nothing to do with lo bayina nitirusa. No one thinks that Kohanim and Levim don't require shmira. It has to do, it's like, because they provide a service to Klal Yisrael through their avoda, like, they get a tax break. So what I just want to point out is that although on the surface of things, the Gemara seems to have plain statements that it's lo bayin et tirusa, almost as a theory of like the Tamei Chacham are not Neneh from the Shmira. When you look at some of the other things going on in the Sugya, you seem to get that there are these other justifications going on. So I want us to try to pick out some of those salient rationales, points from the Sugya as we get there. So let's spend an hour and a half on Monday just carving out the basic issues of Rabban Loban and the Nitirusa and how that sheds light on the basic questions we've been approaching so far. Great. Yasher Koach, everybody. Thanks for joining today. See you all tomorrow at, should we do 11 tomorrow? Or do you want to do 1? What's better for you?
I'm good with 11.
I'd rather 11 too.
Yeah, so you could get into finals mode and start. All right. Anybody against that? 11 work? All right. So let's do 11. Sounds good, guys. Yasher Koach. See you all later.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
Thank you.